You're listening to The Dollop on the All Thang Comedy Network. This is an American history podcast where each week I, Dav Anthony, read a story from American history to my fiend,
Gareth Reynolds, who has no idea what the topic is going to be about. You know, Russell from ATC forwarded me an email from someone who was like, he doesn't need to say about at the end of the intro.
Oh, I was going through the, because I have thousands of emails that I haven't read. So I was going through them today, and there were about three of those. Hey, listen, man, he doesn't have to say about. It's actually unnecessary.
It's redundant.
Right.
It's redundant.
That's why he's doing it. Right.
You know, and my email, my last name is spelled Renlods, R-E-Y-N-L-O-D-S.
Sure.
And I didn't notice for a while, and then it just was how mad it was driving people.
Yeah.
Was so, the sensation to never change it was immediate.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this stuff, everyone needs to calm down. Everyone needs to calm down.
Including Josh Olson, if you're listening.
Yeah, Josh Olson, go
relax.
Fuck himself, that guy.
Pump the brakes.
Jesus. I mean, dude, we get it. We get it. You're an Oscar-nominated writer.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah.
Guess what? People still...
You went to the big dance, Josh. We get it.
People still like to have fun with words, buddy. You're going to be okay. You're going to be all right.
I'm actually writing a movie called History of Violence About.
And called it, quote, his jam pad.
Jam pad?
I'm the fucking hippo guy.
Dave, okay.
My name's Gary.
Wait.
Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the Tickling Podcast.
Okay.
This is like anarchy.
On a five-part coefficient.
My room's aflame.
Now hit him with the puppy. You both present sick arguments.
No sleep till hippo.
No sleep till hippo.
Action, partner.
Hi, Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. No.
Rhoda. Rhoda at the court.
We're brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Life insurance, it gives you peace of mind. So if something happens to you, your loved ones, they're going to have a financial cushion to pay for things like rent, mortgage, loans, education, just everything, daily expenses. And usually life insurance gets more expensive as you age. So it start a policy soon rather than, you know, waiting on it. So look, head over to policygenius.com and answer a few questions about yourself. And in just a few minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need. And then you compare personalized quotes to find your best price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And they work for you. So Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. So you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. And we're brought to you in part by Zen Business. Look, a lot of things have changed out there in the business world. A lot of people are like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I want to find a new way to make a living. I want to find a way to run my own life and handle my own emotional well-being and not have to deal with a boss. I want my own business. Setting up a business can be hard, right? It can be very difficult. It can be confusing. And Zen Business is there for you. It can guide you, give you the essential skills and the resources to help you start and grow your business while you're balancing just, you know, keeping yourself feeling good and okay. And look, if you have a great business idea, it's very exciting, but then you're like, now what? Now, well, I don't know how to do all the business stuff. You don't have to be a business expert to start a business. There are people there to help you, and Zen Business empowers you to turn your awesome idea into a money-making company. Personally, I use Zen Business to keep compliant with all the state and the annual filings, all the stuff. I totally forget about it, and Zen Business can stay on top of it for me, which is great. Keep the business in good standing so I'm not getting in any trouble. Look, Zen Business has helped hundreds of thousands of people get their business off the ground by guiding them every step of the way and making it easier to launch a successful business. Get started today for as low as $49 at zenbusiness.com/dollop. That's zenbusiness.com/dollop. April 16th, 1865, year of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Women.
Hey, what?
I'm just even the playing field. Amen seems a little, you know what I mean?
See my dog back there?
A little limiting.
See my dog?
Yeah, looks like it's stuffed or dead, so congrats on that.
Thank you.
Wouldn't surprise me either way.
Sorry, you threw me off by killing my dog.
Just start with, end with an about. It'll help.
One of the last battles.
When in doubt, end with about.
One of the last battles of the Civil War was fought in Girard in Russell County, Alabama. The cities of Girard and I guess the town of Brownville were butted up against each other. So they're right against each other. Town in Tuscaloosa County already had the name Brownville. So the post office called Brownville, Alabama, Lively.
Well, the post office was like, we actually went through some marketing stuff back here, and Lively's much better.
Yeah, we're not interested in your town name.
How about Brownsville? No, we went with Lively. Just totally different. So that's where you all live now.
No.
We're the post office.
So the people who lived there still wanted to call it Brownville. So in 1890, the census had it listed as both Brownville and Lively. Just to make things...
Okay. All right.
But they gave up a few years later, and the name was changed.
Fine, we're Lively.
Well, no, they changed it to something else. They changed it to Phoenix City.
What? Okay, sure.
You know, much like the legendary Egyptian mythological bird. Except, right. Oh, they left out an O, so it's Phoenix without the O.
Phoenix. We're Phoenix. We're going to rise from the ashes like a phoenix. We're going to Phoenix, Arizona.
I wonder if they do actually call it Phoenix. I didn't look that up.
Well, but Phoenix is always one of those weird, like, you know, Phoenix doesn't really have a leg to stand on. The EO situation in Phoenix has always been a bit of an issue.
Oh, no, it should be Phoenix, right?
It should be Phoenix, but it's Pionix.
Girard now, at this point in time, we're in the early 1900s. Girard now has been nicknamed Sodom by locals in the area.
Wait, so Brownsville's off the market.
Yeah, gone.
So Brownsville went to Lively. Lively switched to Phoenix, and now you've got Girard, who's been called Sodom. Sorry, not Sodom.
Sodom. Well, that's
Sodom and Gomorrah.
That's where all the vice and sex and gambling and boozing has happened, right? So,
okay,
a lot of immigrants have moved there, and a lot of them started making booze. In 1913, Alabama was a big no drinking state, very cutting edge on prohibition.
It's changed.
Yes. Every candidate running for governor in 1913 was for prohibition. 2 years before the U.S. made drinking illegal, Alabama did. So Alabama's way ahead of the game.
Wow. Crazy.
Now, this just made more money for Girard. Soon.
Right.
Soon, the town is sending booze all over the country. Girard made so much money with its distilleries that a Citizens Bank had to be incorporated to handle the inflow of cash.
That's amazing, because it does not sound like the town to have a bank.
It does not, but apparently,
like they were like, oh, God damn it, we got to make a bank.
Finally, the state sent an army of revenue officers to take down.
An army of revenue officers?
Girard. It wasn't a huge army, but it's like...
Pencils out. Right foot forward. No pad.
Is that...
Tittabird tip.
Is that the army?
Put your step. All right, boys.
Okay.
That's about all I know.
That's fair. So they broke in into the whiskey. Whiskey distillers and the saloons. They made arrests. They poured barrel after barrel of booze into the street. 4,000 people from around the area come to watch.
During Prohibition, if you were like a sewer, if you could get into the sewer, yeah, you were just gonna be able to just
shit-faced.
Get so much booze.
Yeah.
Like, they were just basically like Long Islands just running down the streets,
yeah, I mean,
right?
There's also shit in there, but yeah, I get your point.
Whatever. Yeah, but there's shit in everything.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good...
garnish. Yeah. If anyone's like, oh, there's a rat tail in here, you're like, that's a garnish, my love.
That's right.
Put an olive through it. It's a toothpick.
And all the booze is going to kill the E. coli, so you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. There was so much liquor being poured out in the street that children were wading in a stream of liquor and calling it Whiskey Creek.
Hey, we're at the Whiskey Creek. Hey, it's fire at the Whiskey Creek. My children are red in my cheek because we're at the Whiskey Creek. It's at the Whiskey Creek. You shouldn't drink the whiskey from the creek, but some of us had a sip from the Whiskey Creek. We had a bit of a drink in the creek,
Tommy,
from Whiskey Creek.
Tommy.
We had a drink from Whiskey Creek.
Tommy, can you get out?
And then we went,
Tommy? Can you get out of the creek?
We went downtown Whiskey Creek.
Yeah. Okay, honey, you're shit-faced. Can you get out of the creek now?
He
is shit-faced.
You can head out
He's
there.
Absolutely shit-faced.
We're playing about in Whiskey Creek. I'm going to drive a car. I'm going to kill a horse in Whiskey Creek. I stabbed the horse, make him wild. I killed the horse. It's the Whiskey Creek. It's the kids that go to Whiskey Creek. Nobody say no.
I'm saying no. I've been saying no for a while.
The Whiskey Creek.
Okay, he's asleep. Let's get him out of there. Even the sheriff was arrested for having booze. So after the raid, the town goes right back to making whiskey. Nothing stops.
Right.
But now they're just more clandestine about it, right? They're just doing it in secret. So
okay.
After World War I, Girard had returned to its criminal ways. Camp Benning was nearby, and soldiers love booze, gambling, and sex.
Sure.
So they'd come.
Sounds like a fit.
They come to Girard, but they're treated horribly there. They're cheated while they're gambling. They're given watered-down booze. If they complain, they're beaten and cut up. They're thrown in the river through trapdoors in the back of clubs.
Jesus.
So the military declares Girard off limits for soldiers.
Okay.
But they still go.
It does not sound like the right place to unwind if you're a soldier.
No, but they still want to have sex and get drunk.
Sure. They'll try. They'll figure it out.
Yeah. In 1923, federal agents raided the town again. Over 100 gallons.
Raiding a town is amazing.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
Over 100 gallons of liquor are dumped out, but the booze makers just start up again. Now, that year, Girard and Phoenix merged into one city.
Awesomesville.
Well, they called it Phoenix City.
Well, not creative land.
So, it had a population of 10,374. A lot of them worked at the textile mill. And then Fort Benning had 8,000 soldiers. So, they could just make a lot of cash. Booze is flowing. Morphine is being dealt. Brothels are flourishing.
Okay.
Now, the town had always, since it started, been controlled by a small group of crime families, which we will call the Syndicate. During the Depression, it goes bankrupt, the city.
Okay.
They're $1.1 million in debt. So local authorities take a look around, and they see vice as a revenue producer. And since there's no other businesses, everything's been wiped out, they start issuing licenses for the vice that's happening.
Who starts doing that?
The city authorities, the city government.
So the city's seeing like how they've blown a hole in their own economy, and so they're like, so we'll hand out vice licenses?
Yeah, so the depression just ruined
licenses?
The depression has ruined everything. So they're like, well, this seems to be going well.
Right, yeah.
So they hand out licenses, but at the same time, they hand out tons of fines for gambling and using and selling liquor.
So they're sort of doing...
What do you call that?
I mean...
Both endsing?
Yeah, it's what L.A. does a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Where, yeah, like L.A. is just like, we've just declared war on the citizens via fines.
pretty much.
Like, remember when you, like, I remember when I first got to L.A., like, a parking ticket would be like, parking ticket, if you get a parking ticket in L.A. now, you are, your jaw drops.
Yeah, it used to be 20, 25 bucks.
Now they're like, it is something like, it's like $200 yeah. every time. It is, I remember I had a stand-up bit about it once. You get fined less for shitting on the street.
That's true. Which is...
So.
Yeah.
So if you have... If you have your option.
Yeah, if you want to do that, go ahead.
Not if you want to move. I would say move your car. And
no, if you
street,
want to get a lower ahead. Fine, I'm suggesting you shit yeah. on the street.
But officer, I'm pooping too.
In 1938, a gambling syndicate known as the S&M Syndicate created a lottery. It took off. It's super popular immediately. There were so many poor people because of the Depression, and they all wanted to hit it big. So during one lottery in April 20th, 1938, a huge crowd packed into the club where they're announcing the numbers to hear all the numbers read, and part of the roof collapses. But okay. just 10 people are injured, so it's not that bad. So the next day, they all come back, and as a matter of fact, it's many more people. So... Even though the roof caved in, everyone's just like, I got to hear the numbers. And there's so right. many people in the club that they're pushing against the walls, and a load-bearing wall collapses.
Wait. There's enough people that they have, like, Hulk strength?
Yeah, they knocked over a load-bearing wall.
And... If memory serves, those are important walls.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually a reason that you put, like, some walls you'll say that's a wall, and this wall you say, oh, that's a load-bearing wall. That means that there's a
more important
holding up the rest of the building.
Right, right.
So basically, there's just a massive collapse. 24 people are killed. 83 are injured.
Who's coming back tomorrow?
It didn't slow down the lottery.
Really?
I mean, they just need to replace the 24, I guess, but yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, Phoenix City is the place for crime. There's... Fuck. Sorry.
Oh, darling.
There's loan sharking, extortion, bribery, sex work, drugs, booze, people being robbed. Even grocery stores have gambling. The Bridge grocery store had slots, dice, poker, and roulettes. Some stores had kiddie chairs. So kids could sit at slot machines and gamble.
Dynamite. Just dynamite. On the slot machine in the grocery store, you're like, hey, I got three cherries. And like three cherries come out. You're like, hey, that is exciting.
What the fuck?
All right, two bananas. Hey, I want two bananas. Hey, mister.
Yeah.
Don't mind me. I'm just a little down on my luck. I'm on a cold streak. This guy's a cooler, I tell you.
So laundry cleaners ran a lottery. A barbecue restaurant had a lottery.
What? And they're all, I mean, they're all just number lotteries.
I mean, yeah, literally everybody just had gambling in every place.
Right, right.
So people who cause trouble, often they get killed if you cause a lot of trouble, and you end up in the Okefenokee Swamp on the Georgia-Florida border, which is my favorite swamp.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The women who worked at strip clubs and clip joints were called B-girls.
B-girls?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any...
Nope.
Just be... Okay.
Be sure. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Because of all the pollination.
That's right. Their job was to just get soldiers shit-faced and then get all their money by spending right. money or whatever. Right. Their cut was 50% for a drink. So if they could get a
soldier to drink, they would get half of the drink cost.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And each drink was about $10.
Okay.
Now it's 1930s, so that's about $100 today.
Wow. God damn.
So if you just get a guy drunk enough who comes in, if you find a drunk guy,
you get a couple of them.
And the drinks are all watered down. If a soldier came in with his own booze, the B-girl would pour herself a huge glass, and then the bartender would take the glass in back, pour it into a bottle, and resell it, the booze.
Jesus Christ. Well, why, if you're a soldier, why would you, I mean, obviously come in with your own booze.
You're trying to have sex. All you want is the sex part.
Right.
When the soldiers were so plowed that they could barely stand up, the girls would take them outside and bouncers would beat them up and the girls would also beat them up. And then they'd rob them of everything they had, cigarettes, jewelry, whatever they had on them, they'd take.
So if you're a soldier and you wake up the next day and you go, whoa, dude, Phoenix City, man, they took all my booze. They fed me a bunch of water until I got tipsy that was way overpriced. And then once I had too much of it, they took me outside, robbed me, and beat the fuck out of me. When we going back?
Let's do this! Yeah, this story, all I can think of is just that, you know, they're young. They're soldiers, what, 18, 19, 20.
Yeah, still.
And they just want to have, they want to get drunk and have sex. And then the only place to do it is Helltown. So.
Yeah, and they keep going to Helltown and get robbed. Hey, man, I definitely got fucked last night, but not in the way I was thinking.
I also, there's probably a huge turnover at the base, I would imagine.
Right.
Or maybe not. I don't know. So anyway.
Yeah.
It was so bad that in 1840, General George S. Patton was in charge of Fort Benning.
Oh, man.
And he threatened to drive tanks over to level Phoenix.
We will invade Phoenix City. We will take back our booze and we will water theirs down. We will make sure all these men who paid for sex will have sex one way or another. We will not take no for an answer. And by the way, no drinking or fucking. I'm not sure how that affects the battle plans. Let's move.
No fucks. No fucks. Secretary of War Henry L. Stimson called Phoenix City the wickedest city in America. And that was a nickname that stuck. So now everyone's calling it the wickedest city in America. And I'm sure in Phoenix City they were like, that's awesome.
Yeah, of course. It is. I mean, you know, you could only really compare it to Vegas. And like the whole thing about Vegas is how they lean into sin and they they market sin.
You know? If you told,
I don't mean sin in the way of like, you know, biblical, but they like vices, they market vices.
No, if you told me that I was a soldier and they said, oh, by the way, the wickedest city in America is like 3 miles over. I'd be like, how fast and when let's.
And the caveat of you don't go there.
Right. No, yeah.
You don't go there. Yeah. Do not go there. It's just fucking and drinking. Don't go there.
So when payday came to the base, Phoenix City is just fucking overflowing, right? Ton of brothels. They're not exactly secretive about their sex work. Pimps would drive sex workers in the back of pickup trucks down the main street. And then they'd catcall to dudes to try to get soldiers to...
It's a pimp-up truck.
It's a pimp truck. It's a pimp-up.
Truck. You'll get there.
Yep. If a soldier was like, yeah, he'd hop in the back of the pickup bed, and the pimp would drive them around while they had sex in the back of the pickup truck.
Wow.
Usually from one end to the town to the other, and then they'd stop, and he'd drop out, and hopefully another guy would jump in, and they'd just drive back and forth.
Oh, my good Lord. So it literally is a pickup truck.
That's right.
Wow.
I'm assuming you'd have one of those crazy horns.
Can you imagine, like, actively can I imagine street?
I now have a new fantasy.
Oh, good Lord. And once again, pimp, real easy job. Once again,
it's super easy for the pimp, but the lady,
super easy.
The poor lady's doing all the work here. All the work.
Well, that's the whole relationship is based upon that.
That's I already think we should get a union and double her salary at the very least.
Yes.
And I assume it's a salary. I assume it's a salary with benefits.
Yeah, right.
By the end of the mid-40s, Phoenix was collecting about $228,000 in fines. So just fines are just big money.
And and who's fining them? The police?
Yeah, the police, yeah.
So the police department, but again, to what like it's a grift, right?
Yeah.
In a way, because it's like you've set up this place where a bunch of laws are going to get broken, and then you have a police department that enforces when the laws get broken, but you're just making it very easy to do that.
Yeah, and the businesses know it's part of business, so it's just a racket.
Right.
It's just a racket.
Right, right.
The whole city at this point is now, ever since the Depression, it's just dependent on vice. That's all it is.
Right. It's Viceville.
That's right. And the syndicate rigs local and state elections at this point to keep control of the Chamber of Commerce, the school and hospital boards, even service organizations, like the whole town.
School.
The whole town is run by the syndicate.
Right. So I'm wondering what the school programs are probably not the greatest.
Okay, kids, can you open up your book, Fucking and Suckin'? And
yeah.
Okay, on page 4, why don't you go ahead and read that, Timmy?
When you are sucking, mm-hmm. suck it really good. Make sure to also lick. Mm-hmm. Licking is also important.
Lick what? Does it say to lick what there?
The clitoris.
That's right.
Oh, it's a dinosaur. That's the clitorosaurus.
Sure, it's a dinosaur.
The clitosaurus. So when you see the dinosaur clitosaurus, lick it. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then, once the clitosaurus is getting ready, mm-hmm. It's not tracking with the dinosaur from what I'm reading ahead here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So keep. Why don't you stop reading because you're confused?
Yeah.
Let's just skip to the next chapter called Hitting That.
I'd like to read this one.
Jack Culpepper was a 13-year-old paperboy delivering papers when he came upon two drunk soldiers playing a game of William Tell, improvised game of William
Tell. Oh, God.
Tell.
Oh, my God. What? Is that's not the drunk game to play.
No. No.
Let's play arrows.
That's the only game you should play for sure while sober.
Let's play arrows and apples again.
They were not arrows. So one had
I had a feeling
a shot glass on his head, and the other was going to shoot it off with his gun.
Uh-huh. I'm about to kill my friend and not hurt a glass.
Jack, quote, part of his head hit my shoulder.
Well, you're jumping to the conclusion.
Jack was covered in blood.
He shot his friend's head off, basically.
That's right. And Jack jumps off his bike and leaves his bike in newspapers and runs home. He's living He's living with his sister and her husband. And the sister faints. And the brother cleans him off completely and gets rid of the clothes. And then goes out and gets the bike and brings it back home. And then Jack just goes back to delivering papers as if nothing happened.
Oh, my God. Well, he's a paper man now.
Because that
has certainly shifted.
That's what life was like in Phoenix City.
Oh, my God. You imagine like having to read the paper from then on? You're like, still not the biggest story of the week. What's the matter, Jack? I just keep thinking about when that stranger's brain went in my pocket. Well, come on. Perk up, boy. You've got papers to put in boxes.
A man named Hoyt Shepherd owned the biggest gambling house in town. In September 1946, he rigged an election for a drug-addicted councilman to win. So he's got this drug addict, and he wants him on the city council. So,
I'm really not sure if I'm ready to run, but your confidence in me has been unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
So supportive.
Hey, here's some stuff. Here's some more stuff.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to need you know, the new ordinance coming up.
I'm
going to need you to vote yes on that. And
100%, man. Yeah. Yes.
And if you don't, I got to cut you off. But
okay, no,
vote,
man, I don't need to get cut off, dude. I said I'd do it. I'll vote yes, all man. Right, come on.
Just check it in.
Come on. I'll suck the city's dick for another hit, man.
Okay, well, that's a couple of weeks down the road. But right now, we don't have to talk about sucking dicks. But you might have to suck some dick. Yeah.
All right, yeah. Oh, man. Your confidence has been so key in my run.
Yeah.
Ugh.
he buys all the ballots. Hoyt does. He has he has dead people voting. He not actual dead people. But,
this is 2020 all over again.
drug addict wins in a landslide. They have
By the way, in this city, wouldn't you, if you were just like, I'm addicted to drugs, wouldn't they be like, this is our guy?
That's the boy. It's a boy right there.
He's a man amongst the people.
So they have a victory party in a bar that night.
That's smart.
And while Hoyt goes in and he sees this guy sitting at a table with this young woman, and it's a guy that he ordered to leave town ages ago and said, don't ever come back. Like enemy competitor type guy. And the guy all of a sudden on this day decides to come back. So Hoyt and his brother, Snooks, take the guy out into the back dice room and shoot him in the head.
Come on, Snooks, let's go to the dice room. Okay, so, and that is the man who is now in the government?
No, that guy, it's just a different guy. He's dead. It just happened at the party. Oh. It was just at the...
No, but it wasn't... Oh, okay, so that has nothing... That's just at the victory party.
That's just the victory party.
Gotcha.
So, Hoyt and Snooks are arrested. They have several defense attorneys, because they have so much money, they hire a bunch of defense attorneys, including...
Okay.
Including longtime Phoenix resident Albert Patterson. Now, Hoyt and Snooks claim self-defense, and they're acquitted, of course.
Okay.
Even some of the defense attorneys were disgusted by the verdict.
That's disgusting.
I cannot believe that just happened. Holy shit.
Can you believe we did this?
Oh, I am fucking sick of myself.
We have no morals.
I am the grossest lawyer in town. If I'm putting that on my sign. Grossest lawyer in town. I get so many people off, it fucking sickens me. That's how gross I am. I look at myself in the mirror every day and I go, God damn it, you got another fucking criminal off. What a pig.
I'll tell you, if I find myself guilty, I feel really guilty. So, all right, well,
yep.
To the mansions.
So Hoyt basically had been paying off cops, deputies, politicians, judges for years. Usually charges are dropped against him. In this case, he goes to trial, and of course, nothing happens. One of those deputies that he paid off was a guy named Albert Fuller. Fuller grew up in Phoenix, and he joined the Navy in World War II, where he learned to shoot.
Okay.
And then he came back to Phoenix. He was usually, at this point, armed with two gold-plated pistols in holsters.
Wow. So, like, John Woo was like, right this way, my friend.
That's right. He wore Western clothes and a white cowboy hat.
Wow.
And he got a job as a deputy in the sheriff's department in the 1940s. Okay.
And gold guns.
He then set about extorting club owners and became part of the sex worker trade.
Okay.
So he's running cover for these guys and extorting them. He's becoming more and more powerful. Fuller would discourage state and federal officials from finding out about what is going on in Phoenix.
He would discourage them about finding out. So he's like, don't try to learn. Don't attempt to learn.
You know how you're looking into what's going on in Phoenix City? You see my hat? White, right? It's all good there. It's all good, man.
He sounds like how Peter Billingsley dressed in the Christmas Story BB Gun Fantasy.
I have no idea.
It's a deep cut.
We got to have Maple just in the background for all of these.
I totally agree. Look how comfortable. Really bringing a lot to this.
Look how comfortable she is.
Gorgeous.
So he took, on average, he took a third of club's earnings running interference for law and anything else.
Annually?
If for anything, yeah. A third.
Holy shit.
So he's like literally rolling in money.
Yeah.
Brothels explode under Fuller's reign. He's making it super easy for everyone.
When I picture a brothel exploding, it's not because of financial influx. We've got a cum-splosion again!
He was known to flash $1,000 bills, and he wore expensive clothes, even though he made...
What an asshole.
$300 a month as deputy.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
Fuller worked under the sheriff, who also worked for the syndicate.
Okay.
If anyone was causing trouble, the sheriff... sent Fuller to bust heads. So he's basically like...
He's the enforcer. Right.
He's an absolutely terrible person. He once was having a bad day, so he pushed a taxi driver down a flight of stairs.
Oh, my God.
You know, you're having a bad day. You got to kill a guy. I got to let this dog out.
Shh. Oh. Jeez, so he just pushed a cabbie down the stairs just because he was having a bad day?
Yeah. It was said Fuller could, quote, shoot the high heel off a whore from 50 yards.
Well, that's... They weren't known for those expressions back then.
Yeah, also, at what point is that useful?
She's got a bomb in her heel! Hold on. Got this. Yeah.
In 1949, he was made chief deputy sheriff.
Of course. He should be rewarded. This is... Well, down is up in this town, right? So the worse you are with law enforcement, the higher you will... Like,
that's correct.
It's the backwards echelon.
But that wasn't a position. It was something he just made up for himself.
Oh, those are always good.
And then gave himself the job.
Yeah, and a raise. He deserves it.
At the time, there was a bootleg liquor war happening between Alabama and Georgia.
There was a... Okay. Now we're starting to feel like we're tracking Alabama again. Felt like we really lost Alabama earlier, but now we're finally
still here.
Back to our roots.
So they're competing, and Phoenix City was...
So they're having, like, an illegal competition, essentially.
There's a couple things going on. There's the competition between the two bootlegger groups, and then there's the cops trying to crack down. But the cops in Georgia are legit, and then the cops in Phoenix are not.
Right.
So Phoenix City is giving refuge to rum runners. Georgia wants it stopped. So revenue agents start coming in from Georgia into Phoenix City and taking information and trying to investigate. And they're arresting men when they cross the state border into Georgia. And when they start arresting men when they come... across the border, the corrupt mayor of Phoenix tells the cops to arrest anyone in Phoenix working with Georgia revenue agents.
Okay, so now you just have basically two territories off limits to the other territory, right?
Well,
not
really, because anybody
for legal enforcement, cops can't come
to Phoenix.
Right.
Yeah. So Georgia agents are now just walking around Phoenix City gathering evidence, and then they figure out...
arrest them.
They're in plain clothes, but they figure out who two agents are, and they arrest them for loitering.
Right. Okay. So now... All right. Seems like a good system. This is what they say when they say... This is what they mean when they say leave it up to the states.
They released them after a little time in jail, but now the feds send an agent down who is supposed to have unlimited control. He can do whatever he wants, kind of.
Uh-huh.
The agent's like, okay, I found the Fed. He's like, I found out about these two bootleggers. We're going to raid them. I need two of your best guys. And the sheriff's like, okay, we'll take Fuller because he's fucking awesome.
Oh God! So the feds come into Sin City.
Just one fed,
and they're one fed, and he's just like, and they're but they're basically just like, I need someone to work with me. We really got to fix this down. And they're like, let's give you the shittiest, most corrupted guy we have. He'll help you with this.
How about my crime?
By the way,
boss?
He killed the cab driver because he was sad last week.
So the bootleggers that they're going to raid are these...
Are probably like Fuller's best friends.
They are. They're two
hey,
guys.
Hey, look, Fuller's out there. Oh, he's got some weird guy from the city with him. Well, surely he's got to be into illegalities. He's with Fuller.
So they're bootleggers, and Fuller's in business with everybody, so he knows they can rat him out. So they get to the house, and he tells the agent, he goes, you go around back, and I'll flush him out. And then he kicks in the front door and shoots one of them who's sleeping in his chair.
Oh, my God. So he's just like, I have no allegiance.
Not.
Wow, okay.
Absolutely not.
Hey, Fuller, well, we got that whiskey for you. Oh, why'd you shoot me? You're my best friend.
He emptied his gun in the guy. The other brother does run out back. He gets arrested, but then nothing happens with it because the guy's probably too scared to talk at that point.
Right.
Now,
Fuller plays the part of a legit cop for the day when the Fed's there.
Yeah.
the Fed's like, you know, there's a lot of illegal booze being run through here. He's like, man, I swear if I knew who done it, I'd string them up, show them a thing or two. Sons of bitches.
Hold me back.
Hold me back. I'm living at them. Let me at them. Liquor in my tan, under my nose the whole time.
Another guy. So Phoenix City is also just becoming this massive crime. Like, so a guy named Pat Webster ran the Phoenix City Card Company. It's all rigged. Everything is rigged. The slot machines, the cards are marked, everything.
You can't even win cherries at the grocery store anymore.
He's so successful with his card company gambling house that he starts sending rigged slot machines and marked cards and anything else that he uses to cheat to other places around the country. So he's basically become a factory slash consultant for the rest of the country to set up illegal gambling houses that cheat people.
He's franchising scamming.
Yes, basically.
There you go. Here's what you need is a rigged slot machine. Okay, here you go. Just a sign that says none of these slot machines are rigged and you're pretty ready.
I mean, he's literally a rigged gambling contractor.
Right.
And Phoenix City also becomes a gathering place for safecrackers. So...
Oh, wow.
Criminals now. So this gang starts in Phoenix City. They're the best guys. Criminals from other states now come to Phoenix City to learn safe cracking. It's like a safe cracking college.
Is this the story of Gotham? So if you are like, I mean, essentially you have Crime Town.
Yes, it's Crime Town.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
The guy who ran the safe cracking gang was named Head Revel.
What the fuck?
That's his actual name.
What? He's named after like a fond memory? The sensation of a fond memory? It's Head Reveling.
And maybe he just came out and the mother was like, oh, look at his big old head.
What a Revel! You mean reveal? Hey, wait a minute.
So the way it would work is he would give safe-cracking jobs to the highest bidder. Now, they have such a name that people from around the country would send them jobs. They'd be like, okay, so this guy has a safe this place. And they would send it to Head Revel, and then he would give out the info about the safes and their location to the safe-cracking gang who bid the highest. Right. So you'd be like,
wow.
You'd be like,
so you're even, this is, I mean, that's like general contractor.
Yes, you'd be like,
you're getting like house estimates.
I'll do the job and I'll give you 60%. And then they'd go do it and they'd take their 40 and give him 60.
It's Name That Tune for theft.
It really is.
I could crack it in 20 minutes less and I'll take 10% less.
And so, yeah, then they come back and they'd split the cash. And they just kind of, they were like big swingers in town. One safecracker liked to spend his off time on the top of the Manhattan Club, where he would sit with his air rifle and shoot soldiers in the ass as they walked down the street.
I guess the question is, when does a hobby no longer become a hobby? Like when you're shooting people, I think that's when it's no longer your own personal little hobby.
I assume an air rifle is like a BB gun type thing.
Yeah, it's a pretty close. Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's still a rifle. It still hurts.
Dude, they hurt. Yes.
No, I've been shot by a BB. It's not great.
Oh my god, there used to be the Copperhead BBs, yeah, which would fucking god hurt.
And so one day he shoots a soldier who turns around and sees him on the top of the building, and then he charges through the club up the stairs.
On horseback, I'd like to see.
Yeah, but that's the only way you can do it. And then on top of the Manhattan Club, the safecracker and the soldier just have a long, extended fist fight.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, this is very John Wick.
At one point, the safecracker gets knocked down, and he grabs a brick to hit the soldier over the head. But he must have been swinging it or something because he drops it and it goes through a skylight and falls into a poker room and where a bunch of guys are playing poker and just grazes a really well-known gambler. And the gambler just immediately pulls out his gun and just starts shooting at the roof.
Oh, my God.
And then the two guys having the fist fight have to jump off the building.
What? What? They did not have to do anything like that. They could have. I mean, how many? They're like, he's got never-ending bullets. The roof's going to collapse. No, you could be like, duck. Duck for a little while. What? Duck for a minute.
This is
all right. You know what we got to do? We got to jump off the roof. You're damn right we do.
In 1952, a new law required all gambling houses to be registered. There were 270 registrations in all of Alabama. So the entire state has 270.
Okay.
230 of those were in Phoenix City.
Wow. 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 So just very centralized.
So
what must the vibe be like when you cross that city line? I cannot imagine. Just been like, oh, just smells like theft and screwing.
It smells like theft. So Phoenix City native Hugh Bentley was a very religious man. He taught Sunday school. He owned a sporting goods store.
Wait, where does he live?
He lives in Phoenix City.
Okay.
This is amazing. When I read up to this part, I was like, wait, what's happening? Somehow these church-going people like Hugh who have legit stores, they have no idea what's happening in Phoenix City in the early 50s.
He has no idea?
He has no idea. He goes to a sporting goods convention in Chicago, and he's talking to another attendee, and he tells him where he lives, and the guy laughs.
What's so funny about that, friend?
The guy says, I was stationed at Fort Benning, and he calls it the wickedest city. And then he tells Hugh all about...
You must be thinking of a different Phoenix city, friend.
You think about that.
That is not what happens in my town.
I mean, really, Hugh is offended.
Sir, you have quite the nerve to come to me and accuse my beautiful city of such a thing. Well, I don't think one drop of alcohol's been served there in quite a while, let alone pickup truck sex. How dare you? The Lord hath watching.
So he leaves the convention, and this is just, he's just like, I just can't.
I am so pissed at that guy. The nerve to think that something like that would happen in my town. It's all Christians, for God's sake.
He goes back and he tells his wife, and she's like, I just, no, that can't, Phoenix City can't be worse than any other city.
Of course it's not. This man is just lying for some reason to make himself feel better.
So he and a friend, who was also named Hugh, so I decided not to use his name. I'm going to call him the friend.
Thank you.
Because there's enough names in this already.
Thank you.
So... He and a friend decide to go down on a Saturday night down to the red light district.
Well, you know, I thought that red area's often been a little weird. Well, it's always seemed a little weird to me. You don't think any sinning's happening down there, do you, Hugh? I doubt that highly, Hugh, too.
And it is just, they cannot believe what they're seeing. It is just fucking and gambling just... and drinking, like, on a level that they didn't know was humanly possible.
Right.
They're going into club after club and seeing all this stuff. In one club, a bouncer won't let them in. And they're like, we're going in. We're gentlemen of the town. And the
where the Lord hath sent us.
And the bouncer says to him, quote, I'll tear your head off and hand it to you.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just, does next door have appetizers? That's sort of what we're in the market for.
So they come out of another club, and they in the alley, they see a soldier being brutally beaten, as we already know is just what happens.
Right.
And they try to stop it, and they're threatened with their lives. Uh-huh. So
okay.
They go to the sheriff to report it, and the sheriff's like, just mind your own business.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then they go to the police chief, and the police chief's like, yeah, I don't have enough cops to deal with that kind of stuff. And then they go to the mayor, and the mayor's like, I don't want to fucking see these guys. So they're literally spending the whole night trying to get someone to deal with the fact that they saw a guy being beaten to death in an alley, right. And everyone's like, that's not a thing we do.
We don't have enough police power to stop two people.
So they give up at dawn. At dawn, they're like, I guess we can't find justice. And they go home. And then...
How was it, darling? Did you see anything, or was it just as you expected, average?
I saw a man's eye come out of his head.
Oh, well, doesn't sound like something that doesn't sound too bad. That's what matters. Phoenix City is as regular as every other town, like we were saying before.
Grown men were drinking whiskey out of 5-gallon jugs.
Well, sort of what we were saying prior, that this town is as pious as most other towns, and maybe you saw a thing or two, but it's nothing you can't shake.
I saw...
The love of the Lord.
I saw a fuck truck.
Well, one must think that potentially that is just the way the Lord is trying to keep us excited about solving so many problems. That must be what it is. We're just as regular as any other town, like you were saying before you left. And sure, you saw a man's eye come out of his head and things of that nature, but still... The Lord does love us, and the Lord loves this town. This town is a void of sin.
There is a blood-soaked paper boy that just rides around.
Well, it's great to hear that the journalism is thriving in this town. That's what I hear when you say something like that. I don't mean to undercut it, but it sounds like the free press is thriving. Gosh, we just live in the best place on earth, don't we, Dollface?
So... He and his buddy, the next day, after they get a little sleep, for whatever reason, I couldn't figure out why, they decide to go back in the daytime.
I was going to say.
And take a look around.
Your mind has just been blown. Like, literally, someone was just like, hey, you live in the Matrix. You're like, no, I don't. And then you walk around and see a bunch of ones and zeros, and you're like,
Blown. I mean, essentially, this is the old part of the town that was Girard, and he lives in what used to be Brownville. So he's living in this little church community, and he has no idea. There's no reason for him to ever go to that part of town, so he has no idea what's happening there.
And I'll tell you, the largest sin I've seen around here is Betty's mud pie. Well, that is a sin if I've ever seen one.
So they go during the day. They go down there, and there's a bridge you have to go over. And they get to the bridge, and they decide, well, let's park the car, and we'll walk over. And they start walking over, and they look down from the bridge, and there's just this horribly beaten soldier just laying on the riverbank.
Hey, Hugh, can I ask you something, Hugh? Does that load of twigs and branches sort of looks like a bludgeoned soldier, does it not? Look closely down there.
Look at that. That is a red.
Red man.
That is a very red man.
Well, all right.
They do love face painting over here.
I agree. This potentially a clown is drowned. That's what this is. It's a drowned clown.
So they take the soldier and they put him in the car and they want to. They're gonna drive him.
Which one of you is gonna suck my dick?
they're gonna drive him to Fort Benning. The soldier is upset because they've taken everything. They've taken his boots. They've taken his money. Taken everything.
Yes.
Quote: They promised us a private show. Then when they closed the club, they came after us with spiked brass knuckles, clubs, and chained fists.
Who needs to add spikes to brass knuckles?
It's just crazy.
What?
They took all my money and my boots. They took my boots. The sergeant will bust my ass for losing my boots. The guy's face is like hamburger.
He was drowning in a... He was dying in a river. He's like, oh, man, sergeant's going to be pissed I lived.
But that shows kind of how they get away with it, right? Everybody's ashamed of,
Right, yeah. Yeah, yep.
So after all this... Hugh Bentley decides he's going to clean up Phoenix City. And he organizes a group called the Russell County Betterment Association, known as the RBA. The goal is to get the gamblers, the drug dealers, the sex workers, the bootleggers out of the city.
Sure. Real easy.
So the RBA spoke out against fixed elections. because that's obviously a huge problem.
Right.
As well as vice. And then the syndicate starts threatening people to keep them from joining the RBA or supporting the RBA.
Okay.
Q gets tons of death threats. The RBA meets in secret.
Honestly, can I just say how it's... I'm relieved that death threats are so vanilla. Like,
seriously,
it doesn't seem like your death normally got like a warning. You know?
Yeah, right. No, you're totally right.
It's a compliment.
On January 9th, 1952, he went to a hospital in Augusta, Georgia for some treatment. I don't know what for, but he had to go. He didn't want to leave because he had gotten so many death threats. He comes home around midnight, pulls into the driveway of what is left of his house.
Oh, no.
It had been blown up. It had just been blown up. He dives into the rubble to find his family, and somehow they're all alive. His
oh my God.
Son got blown out of the house. His daughter just found this pocket. His wife's okay.
I'm actually quite warm. I feel nice. I was chilly before. Now I feel lovely.
His nephew is in the house. He's okay. They're a little... I think the mom and the brother are a little battered, but they're okay. Like, they're alive.
Right, right. Pretty good for a house exploding.
Yeah, no, if a house explodes and you're alive, you're like, wow, okay, this is a good outcome.
Pretty good.
So them all being alive to Hugh is like...
Oh, no. The Lord is validating my movements.
That's right.
He is telling me that I must continue my quest to shut down the sin of that town.
He pulls them out of the rubble. He immediately hits his knees and starts praying to God and tells God that he understands this is a message to keep fighting against evil in Phoenix City.
Let me tell you something. We've had a lot of people on this show completely misinterpret things and just always find reasons why it's the Lord's mysterious work. If I came home and I had a family and my house had blown up and they're all basically on the lawn like, oh, my shirt's dirty, I'd be like, Lord, you are my savior.
Let's get out of here.
You are real.
So the sheriff arrives and asks Hugh if his oil heater has exploded.
Good. By the way, great. What a great cop. Just lovely, lovely sheriff work. So he knows the deal.
Just so people understand, there was trolling well before the internet. And this is just a delightful example of trolling.
What the hell happened here? Looks like what happened? Oil heater? Problem with that? Someone light a match?
So
let me guess, you were trying to fart into a lighter and it went haywire?
So Hugh yells at the sheriff, you know damn well what happened here. Demolition experts from Fort Benning come to be a part of the investigation, and they conclude dynamite had been put under the porch.
It's not very tactical.
It turns out that
we don't want to get caught for this. What should we do? Dynamite under the porch. Go!
Turns out... it was a local guy named Tommy Capps, whose nickname was Dynamite.
Oh, no. I just realized the downside of my terrific nickname, it could connect me to crimes involving such a weapon. Boy, it seems like I'm a victim of my own brilliance. So Dynamite, there was Dynamite under the porch. That's what brought us to your house today. Boy, that's a regular officer. Wouldn't have imagined something like that. You know, they don't call me Dynamite because I have an affinity for it or nothing.
Why do they call you Dynamite?
Because they call me Dynamite, not because it has anything to do with the sticks of dynamite one bit at all. No. They actually call me Dynamite because when I die, which happens a lot to me, I got a condition, the mite that I show makes a lot of guys go, nah. So they, one guy just said, one day said, hey, why don't we put it all together out of order and die, nah, mate.
They do not call you Tommy Reasons Caps, do they?
Why, no, it doesn't even roll off the tongue. No, but again, I hate dynamite. I abhor the sticks. Oh, boy, there's nobody's more allergic to dynamite than old Dynamite here, I'll tell you that much. Actually, wait, yeah, that's it. That's why I got that nickname. Yeah, because on the cat I get a rash if I touch the stuff. Some people think rash should be a better nickname, but who wants to go around being called rash? So I pushed back at the meeting, yeah, I did. I said, no, I don't want to go by rash. I want to go by Dynamite. Yeah. And that's why I couldn't have done nothing with that dynamite under that porch. I'd look like I fell in poison oak if I did it.
How do you know it was under the porch? No one said that.
Well, maybe it wasn't under the porch at all. Actually, it probably wasn't under the porch. I never even seen a porch in my life. The house I was born in didn't have a porch. My dad told me I'd never have one. He made me swear to God I'd never touch a porch. I swear to God, I can't touch dynamite. And my father's dying wish was that I never set foot near a porch.
Okay, this sounds reasonable. So it turns out that Tommy Capps got the order from Deputy Fuller. And Tommy was often seen at the courthouse talking to the sheriff and District Attorney Arch Farrell, who were both part of the syndicate. The DA was also known to drink a lot and had a terrible temper, and Tommy Capps was a man who took care of problems for the syndicate, and even with all this, Tommy Capps would never be charged for blowing up the house.
Of course not. He had nothing to do with it.
So the bombing had the opposite effect. The bombing brought the town together. It was a step too far. The RBA membership swelled. People publicly called out the DA and others at this meeting. The local dirty politicians all pushed back, saying Phoenix City was clean and law-abiding.
Oh.
At the meeting, a man stood up and called the DA a liar, and the DA's sister then yelled, quote, "Don't you call my brother a liar," and slapped the man. Meanwhile, the DA jumped off the stage and ran to fight the man, but the sheriff held him back. And then the DA got dragged back yelling at the man to go outside and fight him. And then the people at the meeting yell that they're going to impeach the DA and the sheriff. And the DA yells, "Bring it on." So the meeting's not going well.
It doesn't sound like it's going very well for the DA in any way.
So they try to impeach the sheriff. Cy Garrett, who was the Attorney General of Alabama, who's also corrupt, he comes to the sheriff's impeachment trial and as a witness and says that he knows every sheriff in Alabama and he did not know a better man than Sheriff Ralph Matthews, and the sheriff gets off.
Wow. It's just like everyone else in that town.
That's right. So as this is all going on, right, the town's getting upset. They're trying to impeach the sheriff. The gambling houses and brothels don't slow down a bit. Nothing
right.
slows down.
Right.
Now, Albert Pattison, remember him? He was the attorney of the guy who shot the two brothers who shot the guy in the dice room.
Right.
And helped get him off. So he helped set up the RBA. But then he really starts getting involved after the bombing. He had moved to Phoenix City in 1933, so he'd been there for a while, and he'd also defended a lot of criminals over that time period.
Okay.
But now he's like, this is fucking too much. So he also starts getting death threats because he's now on the other side. And on February 24th, 1952, someone broke into his office and covered it in motor oil and set it on fire.
Jesus.
Okay. It didn't completely burn down. There was a janitor there who helped stop it in time, but no one is ever charged again, obviously.
Right. Well, who would have done it? Hey, motor oil, you know anything about this?
Nope. Never been near the place. I can't go into offices. I'm too claustrophobic.
Is that motor oil leaking out of your pocket?
Yeah, but it's not what you think.
What?
Not my motor oil. It's my sister's. I'm holding it for her.
So you put it in your pocket?
Yeah, that's right. I took two handfuls of it and put it in my pocket. She's going to come get it later.
I got to say, this story is really... I haven't heard a story this bad since I talked to Tommy Dynamite Capps.
Hey, I got nothing to do with nothing.
nothing. I didn't even see a thing. Motor oil? I can't touch this stuff.
So.
Guy's a bit of a spaz.
So, the fire and bombing, like the combination, it makes a lot of the locals realize that they have to vote out the powers that be. It's at the top, this situation.
Right.
Because, you know, they're all controlled by the syndicate. So the RBA decides it's going to try to win elections to gain control of the city. Elections in May. And the polls are on Fifth Avenue, just one place. And so voters come from all over town. And the syndicate does their usual thing. They're buying votes from poor mill workers for a buck. The ballots are already marked. Dead people who are dead are voting.
My ballot's already been voted on twice by a dead guy.
Yeah, just put in the box. Yeah, shut the fuck up.
That's all right. Sex workers are being dropped off by the truckload. Some who would yell, quote, "What name do I put on the ballot again?"
Okay. Still, it's an all hands on deck.
So Head Rebel and his gang block the voting booths from RBA people. They just block them off.
Okay. Which is good. I'm the bouncer.
The guy, the friend of Hugh's who went with him that day, the other Hugh, he tries to push through Head's mob to talk to reporters who were on the other side. And a thug grabs Hugh 2 and spins him around and hits him with a sledgehammer.
Okay. So will he be talking to the reporters? It feels like that's probably not going to happen anytime soon now. Sledgehammer. Spins him into a sledgehammer.
I got to say, if I'm going to vote and there's a guy out front with a sledgehammer, I know something is off.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're like, how do you do it? Are you hitting a bell? Is that how we vote?
So Hugh 2 goes flying through a plate glass window of a store.
Jesus. So this dude sledgehammers him so hard he flies through a window?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then the group attacks Hugh and his 16-year-old son. Now, Hugh had been an amateur boxer, so he's fucking giving.
Put up your dukes, boys. You want a slice of this pie? Come on. Who wants a slice of the Lord pie, huh? I'll ring your bell, fella.
So he's giving as much as he's getting. A news photographer is taking photos.
Can you imagine waiting in line? All right, now the newsman's taking pictures of the preacher boxing the sinners in the town where we're supposed to vote. Meanwhile, his friend, also named Hugh, lies outside in the dirt because he was sledgehammered through the window.
Hugh's mother-in-law runs up to a cop and asks for help, but he says, quote, "Lady, they're not going to hurt them. They're using their fists and feet."
Who's ever died from hands?
The fight ends. Hugh and his friend and the son have minor injuries. They take a photo of him, which I'll put up. They'll put up with the episode. But it's the three of them, and they're just bloody, and there's the white shirt's bloody.
Right.
This picture, national news. It's in the front of every paper.
Okay. And as we know, national news, very helpful for your cause.
Always. Albert ran in, so Albert Pattison now decides to run for attorney general.
He's the guy. Okay.
Because they're like, we got to take this from the top. I mean, the attorney general of the state is fucking corrupt. So, I mean, imagine how much money is coming out of Phoenix City going into the state.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, it just fucks up everything.
Yeah.
So he runs in the Democratic Party. Now, it's the South and it's the 50s. So if you win the Democratic primary, you're going to win the whole thing. So the primary is really the race that matters.
Okay.
He campaigned as a, quote, man against crime. That was his slogan. It's cute.
Sure. Yeah.
The syndicate, obviously, the syndicate runs their man against him. Now, the syndicate attacks Albert by starting rumors that he was part of their criminal enterprise and pointed out that he had defended men like Hoyt Shepard and Head Revel.
So they're like, the only way to win this is to make him one of us.
That's right. They're Right. So they're acting.
We're so disliked. Right.
They're acting like their guy is the clean guy and this guy.
Hey, Albert. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, enemy. Wink, wink.
In order to focus on the campaign, Albert turns his law office business over to his son, John, who's also a lawyer. And Albert ends up winning by 854 votes. So basically okay. It means he'll be, when the general election comes along, he's going to easily win.
Yeah.
Now the mafia, the syndicate, starts pressuring and scaring the election officials to put aside the win, saying there needed to be a
recount.
Stop
the count. Count the vote.
And there was fraudulent voting. All the stuff that they had done, now they're saying that's what happened. They did everything they could to undermine the results. 16 days after the win, Albert gave a speech to a church women's group. And he told them he had a 100-to-1 chance of actually living long enough to become attorney general because the gangsters could not afford to let him get into office.
Right. Well, that's how we talk about our like revolutionary candidate in this country.
That's right.
Like, I mean, when you and I talk, we're like, yes, unfortunately, then they will kill him anyway. But he will win. But they will kill him or her.
On June 18th, 1954, Albert worked late, and at 9 p.m. he left his office and went into the alley where his car was parked. A man walked up, shoved a pistol in his mouth, and shot. He then shot Albert three more times. A witness, quote, Albert walked 15 steps with a bullet in his brain and two more in his chest before he fell face down on the pavement at the bottom of the stairs leading to his office.
Eesh.
A few minutes later, the DA and Deputy Fuller went into a bathroom in Dixie Jones Cafe. There was a soldier in a stall, and he heard one of them say, quote, I told you not to shoot him there, you son of a bitch. A crowd gathered in the alley. The governor immediately called out the National Guard under General Major Walter Hanna, nicknamed Crack.
Sure.
So that's what we'll be going
General
with.
Crack? Right. Yep. Yes, sir. What do you think? We should jump through the window and get these crystals out of our arms as soon as we can.
So General Crack was a tough guy. He had tried to enlist in the military when he was just 15. And
sir, I'm ready.
And when the recruiter found out his age, he told him to leave. So Crack tried to deck the recruiter. And then the recruiter threw Crack down the stairs.
Okay.
In World War II, he was in a bombing and he had two crushed vertebrae, two shattered knees, and a broken nose, but insisted on going straight back into the fight after the field surgeons bandaged him up.
Let me go, sir. I'm ready. Don't worry. I've got this.
So now that's who's arriving. General Crack and 75 National Guardmen arrived in Phoenix early the next day.
All right. I like the General Crack's on the scene.
When General Crack got there, he went straight to the alley where the shooting was. He sees no police line, no deputies, no investigators. And the crime scene is full of locals standing around destroying evidence.
What do you think, Crack? Not the best scene I've seen. Just actively destroying. Hey, why don't you guys get some pickaxes? We're destroying evidence. Help us.
He immediately drives down to the red light district and tells the gambling places and other crime venues, it's over.
Okay.
In the middle of the night, that night, trucks leave town packed with gambling equipment.
They were like, this guy's crazy.
Yeah, many of the top syndicate members leave too.
Okay.
You can only imagine what he said to him.
I mean, well, you have the National Guard and then this guy, you know? You're like, yeah. I think this is the real one. The jig is up. This is closing time.
John Patterson, his son, said the local lawmen leading the investigation were the actual suspects.
That's what this country's founded upon, policing ourselves.
But they're so brazen that they just don't even fucking care. The attorney general...
We think this dog did it.
The attorney general comes to town and makes a speech saying he was going to take charge of the investigation and catch this killer no matter what.
Yeah.
While he's
Sheriff O.J. Simpson to lead the investigation for double homicide. We will find this man or woman or running back. Probably not a running back.
While he's doing this, the DA is standing next to him, taking swigs from a liquor bottle, shit-faced out of his mind, and at one point he says out, "I always hated that son of a bitch."
All right, let's not go on record any longer now, please.
"I always hated that son of a bitch."
The DA then says that, sorry, the Attorney General then calls the DA the, quote, "best damn solicitor in the state." And
look at this guy.
And vowed not to remove him, even if the governor or Supreme Court ordered him to.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yep, all so familiar. You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie. This guy, nobody is better drunk than this guy. This guy is the best drunk DA we have ever had. Nobody can lead better than him. Look at him. I mean, he's sitting. Sure, he's sitting and he's spitting a little bit on his shirt, but that's because he told me he had the warm spits before we came out here. He said vomit is for sure happening, but he's fighting through. That's what matters, intoxicated or not, and he is intoxicated. He drank the whole car ride down. He said it was something he made in his bathtub. I didn't even really understand, but he did it through a straw, and he looked at me the whole time he drank it. Didn't blink once. Nobody's better.
So the AG runs the investigation for 2 days and then goes on a vacation out of state.
I'm exhausted. Well, he'd never worked before. He was like, Jesus, being a DA sucks.
So remember, this is the guy who's the DA leaving. So then someone else steps in. The acting attorney general takes over, and he immediately removes the DA from the case.
Why? Or what? Oh, okay.
A week later, he has the DA brought in for formal questioning for 10 hours.
Okay.
While this is going on, the National Guardsmen are now raiding nightclubs, warehouses, and gambling institutions 24-7. So they're just doing 24-7 raids.
Right.
There's just pictures of them just taking out gambling equipment, you know, slot machines. The syndicate is being decimated. On July 22nd, the governor declared martial rule. Now, martial rule is different than martial law.
Okay.
Because with martial rule, that allows all law enforcement to be fired and replaced with military personnel.
Oh, shit.
And this was the the FBI, Hoover, and the president's call. Like, they were like, go with it.
God. I mean, who do you root for? Who are you rooting for? You're like, nobody?
So General Crack goes straight to the sheriff and says, you're fucking fired. They're all cleared out. They confiscate all their cop cars. They do the same thing to the police, confiscate all the cars. Everyone's fired. Go to the courthouse. The DA, everybody out. They just clear a fucking house. They bring in military lawyers. General Clark brings in 15,000 soldiers.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Once that happened, all of a sudden, witnesses come from everywhere. They had been
weird.
They had been scared of everyone in power, and as soon as they're out, they all come forward.
It is very it's like a dictatorship. I mean, really,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it is.
A dictatorship.
Yeah. I mean, you're literally killing people who are witnesses, so yeah.
Yeah, truth. No truth. Existence of truth or anything, you know, or law. Yeah.
A lot of the criminals now just fucking vanish. They just take off. They still prosecute a bunch though. The acting AG and his investigators park their cars every day in the same spot Albert Patterson was shot, and then work in an office next door to his. So they're making a statement with that move.
Right. Right. Right.
The investigations dragged into November, and then a guy named Johnny Griffin testified before the grand jury that he had seen the district attorney talking to Albert Patterson
when
another man came up and shot him. So he saw the shooting.
Okay, right.
Later that night, Johnny Griffin had his throat cut as he walked down the street.
Wow.
They look into the murder.
Damn.
And it turns out it was just some dude, and he gets arrested. He admits killing Griffin and said Griffin had started trouble. And then this a stripper that was also there is a witness. She backs it up and says Griffin started trouble. So the biggest grand jury witness, this is just because of Phoenix City. It's just a coincidence that he gets killed by somebody else.
Wow.
On the night.
So they're like, it's an inside job. And they're like, nah, it just was just that someone didn't like him.
Just our
it
town.
Was just a regular killing. Oh, thank God. Thank God. Okay. Thank God.
Deputy Fuller is arrested. He's tried and convicted for murdering Albert Patterson. He gets life in prison, but is paroled after 10 years. District Attorney Archer Farrell was acquitted. Many claimed he was the legal brain behind the entire criminal enterprise.
The wasted guy?
Yeah, the wasted guy.
Right. So the man in charge of your policy is pickled. You know what we should do next? Put a slot machines for kids in the grocery store. Go ahead. Hurry. Be quick with it, too. Thank you so much.
Attorney General Cy Garrett testified for 10 hours about voter fraud and the murder. And when he was finished, he got in his car and drove straight to Texas and checked himself into a mental hospital, which kept him from being tried.
Wow. That's like one time I bombed so hard at the improv, I walked off stage without talking or seeing anyone and left and went right to my car.
I've done that.
It's like where you just, it's so bad you don't pause to do any actual, any, there's no housekeeping. It's just... over. Gone.
The new governor came in and he pulled the National Guard out after 6 months. John Patterson became attorney general on January 18th. So he must have been appointed.
Okay. Right.
But he's a total piece of shit. He banned the NAACP from operating in Alabama. He tried to stop black community boycotts of Tuskegee businesses and Montgomery buses. He was backed by the Ku Klux Klan, and that helped him win and become governor of Alabama in 1958.
Boy, power's awesome.
A movie was made about the events called The Phoenix City Story in 1955. It's a noir. It's apparently a very good film. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to. And they used a lot of locals in the film, like a woman who ran a club was in it. And so they actually used criminals.
They should be very careful. Hey, where's the gaffer? Oh, my God, he's hanging. We didn't see nothing. Let's shoot.
This is based on Wicked Phoenix City by Faith Serafin, Phoenix City by Edwin Strickland and Gene Wartzman, and Death, Prostitution, and the Paperboy by Brian Moseley.
It's crazy. I mean, you know, that's the thing is that, like, we never get a chance to, like, I mean, Vegas is like that with legal, but as far as, like, everything being legalized in this country, we're so against that. And the like, in a city like that, you're like, well, that business model can totally work. It's just that everyone's so fucking corrupted, so you don't get like a fair shot, you know? But yeah, crazy. I mean, you just think about how this country used to be. It just used to be so crazy. And but, it just...
I read a really interesting article by this Dan Sullivan, and he sort of made the point that, like, organized crime has been pushed out but just replaced by corporations. You know, what is Pfizer? Pfizer is this company that just gave everybody legalized heroin. Like, it's just, they pushed everybody out and then they took over.
And then the people who came up with the drug get fined so little compared to what they made.
Right.
It's a working business model.
Yeah.
But it still is just... I mean that's what's so interesting and saddening is like it is so wild and so different, and yet when it comes to like the political makeup or the way that no actual checks on any institutions, which is what we live in right now. Mm-hmm. I mean that's the same thing. And to the point you're making about how when they're voting them out, they're voting them out. Like, you know, that is not an option that is, yeah, it's not a really working option we have anymore either, you know? So not to get political, but just very, very similar, you know? Like, how do you check power when the watchdog is in cahoots with the power that they're supposed to check? It just doesn't seem like it'll really work great to me.
It won't.
Oh, but it's working great now.
No, it's good.
That's what matters.
It's all good.
Things fine now. Great. Great. Really nice. Yeah. Really cute little, cute, fun time. Only a few people died, which is always nice. About 3 or 4 deaths that we heard about. It's cool.
Yeah.
I would, I mean, those are you know, that would be on my time travel bucket list. I would want to go to a place like that.
Oh, yeah.
Hang out for an afternoon.
Just to see it.
Seriously, just to like see it, you know, and just sit there and be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah.
Everywhere. And then also go to Sunday school that Sunday. Just watch people be like, the town is perfect and everything's fine.
Just drive across town and it's just.
Yeah, white. Literally. Like, have you ever gone left on 9th? Why, no. Why would we? Well, you should try it. No. Our town's fine. Great. Well, we signed cash, even though you're not legally allowed to. We started signing money.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we're signing money. I signed a lot of money. I've signed all my own money here. So.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that makes sense.
It's all good to go. Ready to go. So if you guys want that, it's $2 for a dollar. That's the program we have.
Have we announced yet that you're going to be on the $5 bill?
I think we must have, haven't we?
I feel like we should have. Yeah,
I'm sure we've said it. If someone's just tuning in and hasn't listened to the past few episodes, I'm going to be the new face of the $5 bill. Lincoln's moving to the 3, and I'm going to take the 5 for about a year or two just to sort of see how it goes.
Yep.
So from now on, don't be alarmed to see. And if some of you are like, hey, but only presidents go on money, well, let me tell you, Benjamin Franklin's on the $100 bill, and you're probably going, well, yeah, he's a president. I'm going, hey, I hear you. It makes sense in every way that he would have been a president. They could not insinuate that he was a president more, goddammit. But no, so I'm going to be on the 5 for like the next couple of years.
And this is promotional.
I'm sure we've mentioned this.
This is promotional.
It's purely dollar promotion.
The U.S. is now allowing people to buy. How long before that happens? How long before Pepsi can buy their spot on a bill?
I mean, it is. I honestly don't even know anymore. Now it's starting to get to the point where you're like, I love when people are just like, you know, when history looks back on the Trump administration, it's like, how long do you think we have to look back? Like, what world are you living in where we have 2 generations that are going to be sifting through this bullshit and being like, you know, in retrospect, that was a, it's like.
It does make me laugh.
I know, all the time. They're like, well, history will look back fondly on this. It's like. No. Nope.
If you're lucky.
Yes.
If you're lucky, there's history.
I know, yeah. Well, yeah, I remember when I was a kid and I always used to, you know, like, I always would think, like, wouldn't it be nicer if when, so, like, instead of waiting for someone to die, like, when there are these terminally ill people who are kind of iconic, like, do the retrospective while they're alive so that they can sit there and, you know what I mean? Like, so they can go, oh, yeah, I did do all that. Yeah. And then they die in a week. And then you go, now they died, but we showed you everything about them and you learned them and you valued them while they were here, you know? That's over.
Yeah.
It's all just going to be, you know, lumps. You're just going to be today's lump. And that's what we do. Yeah, it's just lumps. Anyway, no, not to get political.
Not to get political.
We signed cash. See you on the 5, everybody. Start using more 5s. I get a kickback.